Apostles, chapter 15. It's also in your bulletin, so you can take a look there. And here, I've selected this passage because I think it relates to friendship, but we'll see, okay? Sometime later, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let us go back and visit the believers in all the towns where we preach the word of the Lord and see how they are doing." Barnabas wanted to take John, also called Mark, with them, but Paul did not think it wise to take him because he had deserted them in Pamphylia, and had not continued with them in the work. They had such a sharp disagreement that they parted company. Barnabas took Mark and sailed for Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and left, commended by the believers to the grace of the Lord. He went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. Now, this is not exactly part of the script that we're following. I'm using a book by Jerry White about friendship. So I've taken this chapter about hindrances to friendship, and I'm sort of running with it with a little twist. Now, I don't know if my screen is working there. Do I have to reconnect this? I think it's working, right? There we go. Thank you very much. Okay, so before I say anything more about this topic, I want to sort of share with you what Betty and I have been doing this past couple of weeks, which explains why we might seem a little bit worn out. Okay, we spent last week in Southern Cal, in Laguna. This is the Laguna Arts Festival, and that's my son Benji, and next to him is our niece. Her name is Christine, and she and her sister Barbara spent time with us all in Southern Cal that week. So we had a good time. We went to the beach itself, took some candid shots. This is a selfie, and I got everyone but Benji, which is why I put Benji's picture up here first. So I wanted to make sure that you see all of us. All six of us were hanging out and having fun at the arts festivals, spending time eating. We went to eat dumplings at, what's the name of that place?
Ding Dai Fang,
right? Yeah, so that was cool. We went to Hollywood, right? And because you see, we were hosting my nieces. They haven't had too many opportunities to come to California, so we actually spent our roles to host them and show them around. So we walked the Walk of Fame, and I got a picture next to George Takei. So that's cool. And unfortunately, our little dog couldn't come with us, so she was stuck at her neighbor's friend's house. Someone was babysitting him, a dog sitting her, I mean. And so there she is, looking very very excited about the fact that we weren't home. I don't know, maybe looking forlorn. So we had a good time. It was very exhausting because not only was I the chauffeur, but we also had to put a lot of energy into connecting with my nieces. I mean, they're wonderful young ladies, but it takes a lot of time when you're hosting someone. And friendships are like that too. Friendships require an investment of energy and time, and you often wind up feeling tired. And one advice that I want to give to all of you who are making investments in friendships: you need to schedule time to take some time off just to rest and relax and sometimes be by yourself. So I encourage that so that you don't get burned out by. Otherwise, if you get burned out, I think after a while you get tired of being with people, and then that's not good. So this is what we did, and we had a good time, and I hope that all of you are doing the same with your families. Our nieces are not professed Christians, so we spent a lot of time trying to at least model for them some aspects of Christian faith and Christian outlook, and hopefully through our time together they had a chance to hear more about what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ. And I hope that all of us are doing the same as well. So this was fun. This was a great time, but I'm actually still a little tired. So I really couldn't do much last week. I wasn't very productive. Betty and I were sort of binge watching The Sopranos, so my mind was not always in stuff like church. But for today, I just want to start by saying that this whole thing about relationships is really, really important. It will wear us out when we have to make friends, but it's really critical. For if you and I are serious about our walk with Jesus Christ, we also need to see this as our responsibility to make disciples who make disciples. All right. So I hope that will become communicated more and more in our English ministry for the future, that is our priority. More so than anything else, we ought to be focused on trying to make disciples. Each of us need to be disciples who are making disciples. Matthew 28, verse 19, of course, the Great Commission, is not strictly all about go out and evangelize and do mission trips, but it's about going out and making disciples. So Jesus commanded that as a priority. So our small groups are not merely support groups if we are serious about this command to make disciples. And our small groups are not only places where we do social hangouts. Now, both of those are important. We need to support each other, and we need to have a place to hang out and have friends, but they're not primarily for those purposes alone. They're primarily about making disciples. Our Bible studies and our Sunday school classes are not just about acquiring knowledge and debating ideas, even though that's what we do. The goal is to learn how to become better disciples who also make disciples. So our faith and science class, for example, has been really exciting because we've had a chance to really get at different issues. Christians are not on the same page on how we ought to relate to the scientific worldview, our scientific community. So it's important that we actually talk about it and think about how we relate to people who are scientists. How do we disciple our children's faith and help them to thrive in a scientifically minded culture? So those are all very important things that we do, not just for the sake of knowledge. And also, when you think about other aspects of life, when we prepare for marriage, like if you're dating someone or looking to date someone, how can we prepare and encourage our singles to seek relationships that center on following Jesus Christ? That's the big question about how do we make disciples? How do we get our singles who are looking for relationships to see their relationships as the one that centers on following Jesus? And this applies to all of you who are single, and whether you're entering a serious relationship or not, that ought to be a central question. How does your relationship reflect your desire to follow Jesus Christ? Both of you, the man and the woman, or boy and a girl. Okay, and we can extend this question further. How can we prepare couples for marriage and family life that are centered on following Jesus Christ? Most of us, when we get married, we do it for the purpose of happiness, personal fulfillment, satisfaction, you know, and those are all things that come with marriage, we hope. But these are not the ultimate goals, I hope, for our children. Raising children is not the ultimate goal for having being a parent or getting married. And it's also not the ultimate goal of family ministries. We're not just here to provide contentment and peace at home and happiness. The whole point of a Christian marriage is to help the entire family, husband, wife, and kids, answer this question: how can I follow Jesus as I live my life? So all those other things are important. They're secondary. So I hope that's the message that comes across. That's what I hope our vision will be for each of us in our ministry, in this ministry here, all of us who gather, is that we're here to seek God's kingdom first. That's the priority. Seek Jesus first. And then all of these other things will be added unto you. And that's God's promise. So let's not reverse that and seek those other things first, and then maybe we have a space for God. As a Christian, as believers, I hope that you see that it's sort of inverted. So again, I'm not downplaying the importance of all those other needs, like relationships and satisfaction in life and happiness. But those, ironically, according to Jesus, come after we see God first. And I just encourage you to test that out. If you're not a Christian, test that out. True happiness and joy doesn't happen at the beginning. It happens after you find Jesus. Amen? Do you agree with that? Maybe. I hope you do. If not, we can talk about it in Sunday school class. Faith and science class is upstairs, and also our young adult class is scheduled to be upstairs this week. We'll share more about that later. Okay, so having laid that as sort of a foundation, now the next question is that in order to become a disciple-making culture, in order for us to be a community that focuses on discipleship, we need to have authentic friendships. Does that make sense to you? Because I have a hard time, and I'm sure you do too, collaborating with somebody, working with somebody, if I don't trust that person. And if I don't trust that person and care for that person and treat that person as a friend, it's very hard for the two of us to hold each other accountable. If we don't hold each other accountable to even simple things like organizing a Bible study, it becomes even more difficult to hold each other accountable to our walk with Christ. Don't you think so? So without good, solid relationships, we can't spur each other on to become deeper and closer followers of Jesus Christ. So as authentic friends, if we can build authentic friendships in this community, it means that we have to learn how to love each other. All right, so I'm just sort of reiterating the whole themes, the whole year's theme. Why are we talking about first love? This is the stepping stone. If we learn how to love each other, we can then learn how to become authentic friends. And if we become authentic friends, we can learn how to be disciples. Right? And I know that that's not really the ideal way of doing it, but that's sort of the way it happens. Normally, people won't grow unless they know that they are surrounded by people they can trust and can help them grow as Christians. All right, so having said that, I'll just make one more plug for our retreat. Now you know why our retreat theme is making awesome relationships. It's because of this whole point. Learning how to come together across different ages, different language groups. So in our English ministry retreat case, especially there, we have a variety of different communities within this English ministry. How do we come together and learn to become friendly and friends with each other and to make authentic relationships? So just to let you know, and others will later on during announcements will say more about this, but 62 of us have already signed up for the retreat, and we have 6 hotel-style rooms available. That's all that's left. All right, so if you're thinking about coming and you want one of those hotel-style rooms which have 2 queen-size beds and each room has its own bathroom, okay, if you want to get into one of those, there's only 6 left, so you got to sign up. And there's plenty of space for youth. All the youth are going to be in their own cabin. We debated about whether to have a chaperone stay overnight with you. We will continue to debate that. But for the time being, the youth are on their own in their own cabin, and their cabin has a meeting area too. So all of you who are youth are going to have plenty of time to just hang out with each other, but we'll find time for interaction as well. So come, register. The deadline is August 15th, but seriously, there's not that much space left. If you don't register and if space is all filled up, you might have to stay in a tent. They have tent sites as well, and that's an option too. Okay, so anyway, having plugged that, let me continue and just reiterate this point that loving, healthy relationships are the foundation for authentic friendships, and authentic friendships are the foundations for a disciple-making church. So, having said that, what prevents friendships from happening? What are the hindrances that make it difficult for Christians to even trust each other? We call ourselves brothers and sisters in Christ, but yet when we come together, we don't really, really like each other. And that's good. The truth is that we honestly confess that we don't like each other. We're being authentic. That's true. That's good. But when we get together and we can't make friends even within this community, I think it makes it very difficult for us to really to grow as Christians. So why is it hard to keep friends, to make friends, even in a church community? Why do we give up and get so discouraged? And I want to share three hindrances before concluding with a suggestion about how to overcome these hindrances. And the first one is this. The first hindrance is superficial relationships. And allow me to illustrate with this plate of untossed feta chickpea orange salad. Mm-mm-mm-mm. I don't know if you like it. Any of you like feta? Only a handful. I like feta, but I can't eat it all the time. So here you have a plate. Here we have a plate of this is these are the ingredients for making this salad. What do you notice about this salad right now?
Untossed.
Thank you. It's untossed. All the elements are, and the oranges are in one corner. The feta cheese is in another one. I don't know what that brown thing is next to the chickpeas. Is that mushroom or eggplant? What do you think that is? I couldn't figure it out. All right, but so does this salad by itself look tasty to you? Do you feel ready to eat it? Yeah, do you? Yes, no? Why not? Well, you know, I'll tell you what. This illustration doesn't work with the fruit salad for me, because I don't know about you, but I don't like fruit salad mixed up together. I don't like the pineapples mixed with the strawberries. If you give me a plate of fruit salad, I will pick out what I want first before I actually eat. And some things I will not eat. I probably won't eat strawberries. I associate strawberries with other kinds of food. So if you give me a fruit salad, I'm going to start with the honeydew. Okay, I'm going to end with the honeydew. I'm going to start with the least sweet and then move to the most sweet and pick out each one. Because fruit salad, this illustration does not work with fruit salad. So for some of us, I think maybe we think of church the same way. We come to a church and we see this fruit salad, and we pick the relationships we want, which are better for us, and then we ignore the others or toss out the others. But what I want to do is change the image. Just don't think of church as a fruit salad. Just think of it as a feta cheese, chickpea orange salad, okay? That does not taste good alone. I will not eat eggplant by itself, okay, if that is eggplant. I might eat chickpeas by themselves, and I will eat oranges, but it does not taste good unless you do what? What do you have to do to make this appetizing? You gotta toss it, right? That's right. So you gotta put the food together, okay? And then once you put the food together, it becomes a little bit more palatable if you like this type of a salad, okay? Now the way this works is that all of us are kind of picky about where we go to get what we want. So you go to a church. Now, especially if you're a college student, those of you who are high school seniors, you're going to college, you're going to be presented for the first time in your life with a chance to check out different churches, okay? And then when you go to the church, the first thing that's natural that comes to everyone's mind is, do I like this church? Is this church like a plate of salad that I like? Or will I go and pick and choose what I don't like and dislike? Or will I go to a church that it has to only have chickpeas, right guys? Chicks, right? Chickpeas. It has to only have chickpeas. If it doesn't have the chickpeas that are my age, I'm not going to go to that church. Does that make sense? It does make sense. That's our natural inclination. We pick what we like and what's comfortable. So everywhere we go, when we are making choices about church and stuff like that, when we have a chance to make a choice, we don't think about putting the food together. We tend to pick and choose what we want. Cherry picking, in other words. But what I want to say is this, that when you do that cherry picking, it leads to superficial relationships. And the reason why it leads to superficial relationships, it's because you're only stuck with the same thing. You're eating chickpeas, for goodness sake, and that's all you're eating. And you don't get a chance to try the oranges. Right? And as a result, you go to a church, you only see one slice of a community. You don't get to see everything else. And as a result of that, the relationships can become kind of shallow, especially if you don't like I don't like eggplants in my salad. Right? If you don't like eggplants, you're going to avoid the eggplant people. And if you avoid the eggplant people, you'll never get to know who they are and what's unique about them. Right? So when that happens, trust me, the relationships are superficial. And when they become superficial, we don't know how to mix it up with people who are different from ourselves, and we can't enjoy a good feta chickpea orange salad, authentically made, tossed together. Any of you are... Now, I don't know if I actually like this kind of salad. I just found it on the internet. But you know what I'm getting at, right? You see my point? So in order to, how do we build a more deeper relationship? Well, we have to be able to mix it up. And that's really, in my estimation, the only way. To hang out with people I don't agree with, people I don't like, and learn how to build a chickpea salad together. Right, so superficial relationship is one hindrance. If we come at it only trying to look for certain things, it will inevitably become a very superficial relationship. So another hindrance to good, deep friendships, well, this one I'm going to just give an illustration from 1 Samuel. There are things beyond our control that make it very very difficult for us to make friendships, okay? And for example, in 1 Samuel 20, here we see an episode. Now, just as background, David and Jonathan. Jonathan is in the Old Testament. Jonathan is the son of King Saul. Right? He's the prince, and David is this person that God has chosen who will become the new king. And you know, can you imagine the tensions that go on? Because the hints are there. God's showing all the signs that David's going to be the new king, and King Saul is going to be deposed. So all the signs are coalescing until this point. But the thing is that Jonathan, who is the son of Saul, and David were best friends. They were the closest and best friends. They considered each other so close that they loved each other more than they loved women. I don't know what that really means, but essentially that there's this close relationship that Jonathan and David had. But in chapter 20, what we see happening here is that Jonathan's father, King Saul, was at a point where he felt so threatened by David that he was planning to kill David so that he would not have that threat to his throne. And despite their friendship, even though Saul knew that his son Jonathan was close friends with David, he still wanted to have David killed. And Jonathan wasn't really aware of that. So in chapter 20, he and David are talking about this, and David's saying, "Why does your dad want to kill me?" And Jonathan says, "Well, I don't know. This is news to me. I didn't know that he wanted to kill you. Like, here's what we're going to do. At dinner tonight, David's not going to show up for dinner, for this banquet, and Jonathan's going to be there, and then they're going to sort of ask, "What did you notice that David's not here?" and see how King Saul's response was. And Saul's response, if it was a positive response, "Oh, he's gone away, it's okay," then that's fine. It means that King Saul maybe wants to keep the things going, and he's not that upset. On the other hand, if King Saul gets really upset and furious and wants to and publicly says he wants David killed because he's offended by David's absence from the dinner banquet, then Jonathan will know for sure that King Saul's intention was to kill David. So as it turns out, King Saul got upset. He threw a spear, just like in Game of Thrones or Sopranos, or people are going to get mad, they throw things around. And those of you who are younger than middle school, do not watch Game of Thrones or Sopranos. Do not. But those of you who are older, you can see that there's a lot of violence there. So then the next day, Jonathan is very, very upset. He knows that his father is out to get David. So they meet. They meet. And according to, if you go to verse 41 in chapter 20, they met each other, and Jonathan and David bowed down before Jonathan three times with his face to the ground, and then they kissed each other and they wept together, but David wept the most. And despite the fact that their friendship was not in their control, they were determined to keep their friendships, even though they knew they had to separate from each other. In verse 42, Jonathan said to David, "Go in peace, for we have sworn friendship with each other in the name of the Lord, saying, 'The Lord is witness between you and me, and between your descendants and my descendants forever.'" Then David left, and Jonathan went back to town. There are some situations where we just cannot make friends. In the case of David, there was this King Saul's created a very untenable situation for the sustaining of friendships. They pledged to try, but it was difficult. There are other situations in our lives which make it difficult to make friends. So those are hindrances, such as language difference. Like if I were to go to China or Taiwan, I might be able to understand most of the Mandarin that's spoken, but I would have a very hard time communicating and becoming friends with people from Taiwan or China, unless I spent a lot of time with them. And very often I cannot do that. So churches like ours are very unique because we have exactly that kind of setup. We have folks from the Taiwanese-speaking side and the Mandarin-speaking side and our English-speaking side who cannot understand each other. And that's okay, but it becomes a hindrance to becoming friends, right? So let's just keep that in mind. That's a hindrance. It's a real hindrance, and it makes community life challenging. It's not like going to a church where everyone speaks the same language and you can just go in and somehow fit in there. In our church, we all have to learn how to overcome this hindrance. And then there are other hindrances in society that prevent us from becoming friends, such as gender differences or race. They all prevent us from actually reaching out and making friends. So those are hindrances. They're difficult to overcome, but I want to acknowledge them, that when we face them, we just have to be realistic and try our best to work with those situations. A third hindrance to making friends is found in the passage that I shared with you today. And here we have in Acts chapter 15 a situation where Paul and Barnabas split up. Now, if you recall the story of Paul and Barnabas, now this is a story of deep, deep friendship. Without Barnabas, Paul would never have been embraced by the Christian community. Because Paul was this persecutor, this outsider, who was agitating and trying to destroy the church. But Barnabas was the first one to reach out to him and welcome him in and build trust. So without Barnabas, there would be no Paul in the church. So, and after they worked, they built trust and Paul was welcomed into the church, they worked together on trying to make the gospel available for all people. So that as partners, they went around not just preaching to Jewish people, Jewish Christians, but also to non-Jewish people and sharing the gospel with them so that non-Jewish people could also be invited into the faith. So the two of them were very remarkable in that they were close friends, they were allies, they were co-workers, and they worked so hard to make the gospel available to everyone. And they fought against those more conservatives in the church who didn't want to open the gospel to non-Jewish people. And it was a struggle. In Acts chapter 13 to 15, you can see there that the two of them worked hard together. But yet, after the Jerusalem Council in Acts 15, after the church finally decided that we can embrace and welcome Gentiles into the church, they fell apart. Their relationship fell apart. they weren't able to stay together. And the question centered, according to the passage, on whether or not to allow John Mark to be part of their team. Okay, John Mark, according to this passage, was apparently a young Christian who was not very stable. He gave up easily. So when he accompanied Paul and Barnabas on their missionary travels, he sort of walked out on them and abandoned them. But Barnabas wanted to continue to hang on to him and equip him and to help him grow. And you know something? This is typical of Barnabas, right? He's the encourager. He wants to help others and mentor others. He did that with Paul. So he wants to do the same thing with John Mark. But Paul was different. Paul was more like, you know, you don't perform, you're out. You don't keep up, you're out. I can't trust you. We got some difficult things ahead of us. If I can't trust you, then I'm not going to let you stay with my team. So both of them conflicted with each other over this issue. I don't know how you would have felt. Are you more like Paul or more like Barnabas? But whatever the case may be, this led to such conflict that the two of them separated. And Paul went on his journeys, and Barnabas went on his. And since the Acts of the Apostles follows Paul's journeys, we don't hear any more about Barnabas. But we do hear maybe later that Paul might have reconciled with John Mark in one of his letters. But what we do see here is a lack, in my opinion, of self-reflection, more on Paul's part, I think. And even though Paul is the inspired author of so many of the New Testament letters, and through him we know so much about our faith, we understand it more, he was still human. And I would say, if we look at him right here, some of his flaws really showed up, and I don't think he was aware of them. So if the third hindrance to relationships is to not be reflective enough of ourselves, not looking at who we are, and what our tendencies are, and how we treat people, and we don't pay close attention to that, it will hinder any relationship that we may have. And this is where I want to then turn our attention to the handout. If you have the bulletin in the insert, I have a little chart there. It's called Friendship Inhibitors, and this comes from the Jerry White book about friendships. And I'll go through this really, really quickly. And I want to ask you, as I'm reading this, to mentally, or if you need to, you can also get a pen or a pencil, and just rate yourself. Are you this particular quality rarely, sometimes, frequently, or always? Okay. These are the qualities that Jerry White considers absolute hindrances to making good relationships, to making good friends. So, are you shy? If you're very shy, you probably won't be able to make too many friends. I think that's probably true. The good thing today is that we have the internet and you can do social media. So if you're really shy, you can still make friends that way. But they're still virtual friends, and not. But that has given us an opportunity for shy people to make friends. So shyness is a fact. Are you bossy? Do you want to have your way all the time? If you are, then you will probably have a hard time making friends. Because friends may follow your lead, but they'll never be close to you. I mean, the people you hang out with. Are you overscheduled? Do you make yourself too busy so that you can't make time for friends? Okay. And are you one who betrays confidence? So if someone tells you something in secret, do you tell other people? Are you always angry? Are you negative? Are you critical, demanding, possessive? Are you unrealistic about expectations of what a friend should be like? Are you unwilling to reveal more about yourself? Are you proud or intolerant? And I shouldn't have phrased it that way. I should have phrased it this way. Am I like that? And I have to ask myself these questions all the time. This is a very helpful guide for me, because I know that there are times I'm very angry and critical and demanding, and I have to learn how to let go of that. And I'm not saying that all of these characteristics are all bad. They come out of the way God made us. We're all gifted with our personalities and with who we are. And because when we're under stress, they tend to push us into a certain direction, and we start to become more like these. We share these type of characteristics. So that's the question I want to ask you. And maybe I'll take a pause for about 1 minute and ask you to look over this list and just do a personal inventory right now. Are these characteristics that you exhibit? Are you aware of that? And then maybe you can just think about it for now.
Lord, may that be a prayer for us, because God really wants us to examine our hearts, to examine ourselves regularly, because in doing so, we can determine how well we're growing in our faith. So please do take this chart home in your bulletins and test yourself every now and then. And ask yourself, are you becoming too much of one of these characteristics that hinder relationships? So how do we overcome these hindrances? Simply put, always start with God, as revealed in the Bible, and especially as revealed in Jesus Christ. And always remember this, that we were created in God's image. And because we were created in God's image, we are therefore called to reflect this image of God to the world, even with our friendships. So this, if we go back to this chart and ask ourselves, is God like any of these characteristics? What do you think? And if not, what is God like in comparison? Is God shy? What do you think? Yes, no? God could be shy, right? I mean, sometimes, you know, but he did say to Elijah that you can hear my voice in a still small voice, right? You know, so sometimes God is shy, but most of the times he's not, right? He's very proactive. He's chasing after us, right? Okay, is God bossy? What do you think? Is he overscheduled? Is he too busy for you? Does he go around spreading rumors, telling the other religious groups that, no, I'm just kidding about that, but So I want you to make the same assessment about what you think about God, okay? And as you do that, you know, we don't have too much time. I hope this is something you can only do in Sunday school or on your own. Study the scripture. Look closely and see how does God reflected in comparison to these characteristics. Can you think of any Bible passages that would validate what you think? Like, let's say, angry. A lot of us think that God is an angry God, because if you look at the Old Testament, he does appear to get angry quite often, right? So how do you deal with that? And how is God really always angry? And how do you think that through? So that's what I'd like you to do when you have a chance to compare this list with what you understand God to be like. And if God looks different, then can we be like that? That's the next question. Because ultimately, we're trying to become more like God. We're trying to become more like the reflection of God in our everyday life, and we're trying to do our best, as we learn from Scripture, as we learn from Jesus himself, to reflect who God is to the world. And I really believe that if we try our hardest to open ourselves up to God's Spirit, he will transform us and help us to become more like his image. So, and as a result, I believe the friendships that we develop will become more deeper and more authentic. So I want to root friendship, authentic friendship, in God. Right? There are psychological reasons and other psychological explanations and that are very helpful, other psychological suggestions and solutions. But for Christians, I want us to root our behavior, our friendships, in our understanding of God. Okay. Now, I want to close with another way of looking at this, okay? If you do your study of God, it can become very overwhelming. There's all these characteristics of God. I would like to think of one particular characteristic that allows us to really overcome our difficulties with making friends, or keeping friends. And that is the character, the quality of steadfast, faithful commitment. And a good example of that can be found in the story of Ruth and Naomi. Any of you familiar with this story? Yeah, I see show of hands. You all know this story. As you know, when tragedy struck Naomi's family, their family had to move to Moab to escape a famine. And even then, tragedy upon tragedy kept on hitting her family. Her two adult sons who married Moabite wives, they died. So Naomi was a widow with no sons. And in Jewish culture and Asian culture, that's pretty bad. That's very tragic. That's horrible. And she said, everyone just call me bitter. My life is all about bitterness. So she wanted to move back to Judah, back to her home, her people, because her husband died, her two sons died. And she let her two daughter-in-laws, named Orpah and Ruth, she said to them, you know, you guys, you sisters, you're free. You don't have to stay with me anymore. You know, this is done. I'm going to go back and essentially die. You two can go. Orpah decided to go home, stay in Moab. But Ruth decided to stay with Naomi. And in that, Naomi asked Ruth to leave, Ruth said to her, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if death separates you and me." And this fabulous story of Ruth's faithfulness, steadfast commitment to Naomi, is at the heart of this message here, the heart of this beautiful, beautiful piece of literature. Her faithfulness to Naomi is what transformed everything around, turned everything around for Naomi and her family, and eventually Ruth became one of the ancestors of Jesus. So I don't want to go too much detail, but I do want to point out this, that Ruth was exhibiting steadfast commitment. The Hebrew word for that is chesed, steadfast commitment, because she probably saw in Naomi, and maybe not directly, but she saw in Naomi's God a steadfast commitment. And even though, to be quite honest with you, I'm not sure I would have seen that. Because if you look at Naomi's experience, I might have even questioned whether God was really all that caring and steadfastly committed to Naomi. But somehow, Ruth saw that in Naomi's God. That there's this quality of steadfastness, commitment, loyalty, patience, hanging in there, not giving up, that she wanted to possess, and she eventually did. So she followed Naomi back to a foreign country to adopt their God, even though that God never did not really, at least at that point, did not display himself as a faithful God to Naomi. So this is an example of trust and faith. So sometimes when we have friends in church and we get frustrated because our friends are not really good friends, we sometimes wonder whether, how come these people are worshiping this God? Is this God really that good? An act of faith is an act that says, it doesn't matter how bad the people are, and how you got to still somehow stay loyal to them and to God. So I just want to say that essentially this, and I'll close on this. I believe the best way to overcome all these hindrances to making good friends is to continue to have a heart of steadfast commitment. When things go wrong, instead of abandoning ship, you stick with it. You stay with people. When a person might have offended you, instead of just rejecting that person, you stay with that person and commit yourself to being that person's friend. Not only in our external behavior, but also in our minds and our hearts, I hope that we can maintain a patient, steadfast commitment to our friends. And I really, really do believe that if you do this, you are reflecting God's image to this world better than any other way you can. Even better than just, you know, talking about the gospel or even, and that helps, but even better than just sharing with people, telling people about Bible stories. If your heart, your mind, and your actions exhibit this steadfast commitment to people, to God's community, that is how you overcome the hindrances to friendships. Please pray with me as we look at our reading, our prayers of the people together, if we can turn to that. And then afterwards, I would like to invite our praise band to lead us in a response song. Patient God, we schedule our lives down to the very second. It's not moving. Oh, there you go. Okay. Go ahead. And when it comes to when it comes time to be with others, we spend our time worrying about details rather than longing for the visit. Help us to place ourselves in your care and to be good, trustworthy friends to one another at Canaan and with our neighbors. Amen. Can the praise band come up?